We're going to be teaching you today proven strategies to hire and lead your first 1 to 5 developers. We'd love to know what brings you here today.
The process, the beginning stages of the hire, to test them out, to vet them, make sure they're a good long-term fit.
Right.
Right in that beginning period.
Right. Okay. So vetting somebody, understanding if they're a good fit long-term. Yeah.
We've got an offshore team, so it's when we start offshore, basically.
Right. Okay. When to bring an offshore team, when to change that in-house. Okay, cool. Anything else? Yeah?
I've been told that developers that cost 10 times more can give 40 times the output, and I don't know how true that is. So I don't know if it's like, you know, pay $5,000 a month, or you pay $40,000 or $20,000, whatever that looks like. It's such a huge scale, and I have no way to be able to interpret myself personally as CEO, you know, how to gauge that.
Absolutely. You can definitely, and that's been proven, spend $40,000 and not have the return. But there is definitely that going when you have a good person. We're going to answer some of these questions on the talk today. But any question we don't answer, right, we're around. Come to us. We will have time for more Q&A, but I don't, you know, Kyle also wants to do his talk, so I'll probably let him. So come to us, see us at our booth. We'll answer any question that hasn't been answered also after Q&A. Very quickly about me, this talk is mainly going to be done by Miguel. My name is Victor. I have helped over 300 companies launch, raise, scale, or exit by advising on development strategies, product strategies. My background is in engineering management, worked as an advisor, CTO, CPO at startups, founder of Josh Ring, and we're also on YouTube where we give a lot of that advice as well. So feel free to check us out. Miguel, I'll leave this to you.
So nice seeing you all. I see some familiar faces here. I know a few of you already have spoken. My name is Miguel. I've been working with product management for 15 years, you know, all kinds of levels. Been product manager, director, head, SVP, set up a few development teams through the years. I am now been, for the past few years, I've been working as a fractional CPO for different, usually SaaS companies. And since the beginning of the year, I'm also the CEO with Treasury as well. So we're going to talk today. Here is one of the cases that we've had. We helped Mohammed in particular with slave boarding. He came with an idea. We helped him with the discovery, define the product, helped him find a software development company to bring it on to life. And eventually, he wanted to bring that development in-house, right? So we found a way to get him a very good developer. And with that, we helped him in organizing all the development and owning the whole platform and the development of it. You can see he was actually very, very happy. He's a very good person to work with. Now, we're going to talk about how to define your next developer position and what they're looking for, what they're interested in. We're going to see how a clear roadmap can help and how we can make it work for them so they can understand and follow it. We're going to establish minimal but working processes, which, you know, they're very much required. And we're going to manage your team without micromanaging. I'm speaking very fast because I want to get to the Q&A with you guys. Right, but, you know, take notes of that. So first thing is you want to be ready for hiring and managing the developer, right? What that means is, first, know exactly what they're going to be doing. You know they want, you want them to do front-end or back-end development, but do they have to do any DevOps? Do they have to do any architectural designs? Do they have to do any technology decisions, right? At what point or what is the actual scope of the responsibilities, how do they fit in the team? You want to know that before you actually start doing the hiring. This is an example of how we define those roles through the discovery process with, you know, in our recruiting process for our clients. You also want to be, of course, aware that you're hiring not just the experience, but you're hiring the mindset and the attitude. And they have to match your company, right? You have to. I mean, the developer might have a very good experience, but they might not have the right mindset or, you know, or way of working in your process. Integrity, intelligence, and energy are, you know, the three are very good, but you really want integrity as well. You're checking for these things when you're actually hiring. So prepare yourself not just to define the skill set that you're looking for, prepare yourself to also know, am I working with this person? Can I actually work with this person? Can I see this, you know, do we speak the same language in terms of process, in terms of the level of process? Because you can, you know, they can acquire the knowledge, but can they you know, change the way they work. So, and of course, you would want to decide on a few basic people policies, right? So what is the, what is your stand on PTO, on vacation, on sick leave, on maternity? How do you appraise the performance? How do you have any objectives or any other kind of compensation that you want to offer? These questions will come through the interview, through the recruiting process. And anyways, if they don't come at the recruiting, they might come later. You don't want to just have to invent them in the last minute. So it's always good to keep in mind that you're going to want to define those at least at a little level. Why that is important is because you start with one developer, but eventually you run into five and more, and you know, you don't want to keep changing those policies as you go along. You want to have something that is stable for at least a couple of years. Now, in terms of mapping the skill set, so what exactly is the developer going to do and who does what? This is something that we also check, and it is very important because as I said, you know, a developer role can be different in different companies, and what you want to do is you want to map all of those front and back end DevOps, product lead, who's doing the product lead, who's doing the technical lead, who's writing these stories, who is, you know, planning the roadmap, how do you translate that, who's doing the documentation. And you can have, we have people here, you can do it by role, it doesn't have to be the name, it can be the roles. So in that way you're mapping, and of course, you know, if the company is not too big, you might have the same person doing different roles, but it's important to understand which hats you're wearing as you're doing the different tasks. And of course, understand the difference between having a person on demand, dedicated or part-time. Because, you know, they could all work in your setup, depending on what you're looking for and what you need, but they're all different, right? So on demand will have lower commitment, but higher flexibility, for example. Dedicated and part-time usually have higher commitment, but you know, it comes with a cost of having enough time, enough work for them. And one thing that I normally mention is also keep in mind whether if you're hiring a part-timer, for example, looking to turn them into a full-timer, be aware of how that transition could happen in terms even of compensation and the workload, for example. This is another thing. When you're hiring your people, the developers in particular, they have to get busy. They really get busy. So one thing that you want to do is you want to have a clear understanding of who is managing the product, who is going to be doing the product management and the project management of their tasks. Because of course you have your roadmap and you have your plans, high level, you know, for the next quarter, a couple of quarters. But in the end, they have to materialize in user stories and backlogs and sprint work, and that takes time. So you really want to make sure that, that you have that covered. So for example, one thing that we have seen working very well is a winning strategy is getting, for example, one developer and a part-time project manager that would work with them in tandem, or maybe a couple of developers and a full-time project manager. And you don't need so much of a product manager in that sense. It's not so much about managing the product and the roadmap. It's more about the actual tasks that have to be done in the development and the sprint. And of course, at any point in time, you can get a fractional CTO or a fractional CPO to come in for a few hours and, you know, advise or coach or mentor a particular part of the process. That takes me to the process itself. So you want to have a clear process. Your process doesn't have to be very, very big. It doesn't have to be super complex, but you do want to have a process. And you want it to be clearly understood and documented and followed. Why is that? It's because it simplifies the way of communicating and the way of working between the development team and the product person and, you know, potentially the, and even when you're wearing different hats if the company is not too big. So it should be a development process that is adapted to the size of your company, but it should be very clearly documented. And also realize that when you're hiring your first or couple of first developers, you've probably been doing development before, and the tools that you had and the process you had before might not work for your new developer, right? So if you were, for example, a solo developer, which, you know, sometimes happens, the tools and the process that you had for yourself might not be useful enough for that new developer that's coming in, so you want to tailor that a little bit. Or sometimes you've had a small team building an MVP, and you do want to, you know, have a few more checks and balances in between if you can do a more continuous development with another developer. You materialize that into having very clear working agreements. What I mean with working agreements is how do we stand on a number of topics? Like, what is our definition of done? What is our definition of ready? What level of quality are we looking for? Are we happy with, you know, 80% quality before releasing, or 90% quality before releasing in terms of bug fixing? There are many of those that have to be clarified. Who does what? What does product do? What does technology do? Those are also very important. Here is, for example, a checklist that we normally use to go through all of these topics as well. We mentioned Kanban and Scrum in here. And personally, I don't believe there is any right way of doing things. It just needs to fit the company and the process and the stage of the company, right? So you could steal a bit of Kanban and steal a bit of Scrum, as long as you know what bits you're taking of each and how you make them work together, if it works. That's what matters, really. Now, you also want, and we mentioned this at the beginning, you want to have clear work plans. The reason for that is you don't want the developers to be idle. The development teams, for me, are like the engine of the company. They make, you know, they create all the features that we're actually selling and the marketing, right? So you want them to be busy. So, and that means you're probably working, or the project manager, the product manager is actually working with them and implementing this current iteration of what they're doing, but they're also preparing for the next, because you don't want them sitting. You want to have enough work for them. And when you're hiring one or two developers, be ready for doing that level of product work that will be required in advance. So that materializes in having a roadmap, having clear understanding of prioritizations, and of course documentation. We're going to talk about documentation in a second. Why documentation is important is one of the ways to get the most out of the developer and the development process. So when we talk about documentation, we're talking user stories, epics, initiatives, features. It doesn't have to be a massive Google Doc, but you need to have just enough that the developer knows what they're doing, where they're doing it, and how it fits into the bigger picture, right? So you're going to have a roadmap, you're going to explain the roadmap, you know, hopefully once a quarter at least, so they see what's coming, but then they need to see that broken down closer. And in that sense, that's where you can get the help of the project manager, for example. So if you have your roadmap at a high level and you own the roadmap, that's not too time consuming in that sense, but all of the user stories and the epics, all the actual working with development team, that will take more of your time. So that's where you can actually delegate that, the back of the work, to a project manager or a business analyst for a fraction of the cost of the time. That does not mean that you don't have leadership, and that you want to be clear about who and what the product leadership is and what the technical leadership is. So usually in my mind, a product leader decides what is being done and in what order of priority, in what sequence, right? And for me, a sign of a very good product person is one that can tell a story, a very compelling story, by reading the roadmap, right? So we know we have these goals for you know, for the next quarter, and we believe we want to increase, you know, customer acquisition, we want to reduce churn. So we have identified these few things that we want to do, and we're going to work on them during the quarter in this sequence, and you know, and we expect these results and the outcomes as we work through. That's a good way to identify that you're talking to a product person. Technical leaders, on the other side, they are responsible for how things get done, right? So all the architecture, the current architecture and the target architecture, and the path to get into the target architecture. Development standards, how the developers should be working, infrastructure, scalability, security, headroom. I was talking to somebody about headroom earlier today, right? So those are important topics. That does not mean managing the development team. It means managing the development process, the content of it, but you still need a people manager for the developers, right? So that's the other question. Who will manage your developers? Somebody needs to still approve the application. Somebody needs to still, they need to do performance management, salary reviews, career progression. So one thing that we have noticed is many people believe that their CTO will actually manage the people. And that normally doesn't happen. They normally want to be very, very explicit and clear about that. Who will be doing the one-on-ones with the developers, who will be sitting with them, understanding when they are, where they are in the career, where they want to get to, and how they're progressing through that. I mean, you can always hire fractional CTOs and CPOs for the process and adapting things, but the actual people management aspect needs to be in-house. You need a person that is there with them all the time. So we're talking about, this is, we're coming to the end, we're talking about accountability and remote culture. And how, we said at the beginning, you want to find people that will match your culture. And that is very important because with your first developer, couple of developers, your culture starts to take shape. You know, you're starting the first round of culture. You don't want that to shift very often. So you want to find the right people. For example, you want to delegate efficiently. And here I'm also including the project manager that you might have. You want to have guardrails. So a process normally would be a list of things, a list of steps that they have to follow. But very often that can be constraining and that kind of slow them down because they have to go through the process. So also very often is actually more helpful if you have guardrails. Like for example, say I want nothing that is below 90% quality should be released. So everything needs to be tested. Below 90% needs to go back. Or things like no work without a ticket, please. If you're working on something, I need to see a ticket, I need to prioritize the ticket. No user story should be longer than a couple of days of work, for example. So those guardrails are actually very, very helpful in delegating without letting the team run loose in different directions. And of course, even with those, you want to trust and verify. You want to let them work and delegate efficiently, but you also want to come and check in and see whether they're actually performing the way they're expected to perform. So it's not just about checking the number of commits the developer is doing or the time logged or the number of tickets that they're closing. It's the actual outcome. So how close or how much does this feature in production reflects what we thought it should be and what we actually defined at the beginning of the process, right? And how one correlates to the other. That's very important because you might have, I have seen all kinds of developers and I've seen some that would just, you know, do a lot of commits for not a very good reason, just to increase their rate and say, no, look, I'm committing a lot. So you don't want that. You can also, of course, establish independent code reviews. You can always get a fractional CTO, come in, do a bunch of reviews randomly or a particular side of the platform, of your system, and get an expert advice or, you know, understanding of where the developer is and how they're working. And you can also have your own approvals in the process. When you define the process, you can involve yourself at the right steps, whether that would be, you know, testing before releasing or looking at the prototype during development or adding yourself to show and tell some demos at the end of the sprint. You can, of course, trust and verify in different ways along the process. And then finally, coming towards the end, you want to manage the people, not just the process. So, you know, build rapport with them, get to know them, get to know what gets them thinking, why they are the person that they are, what they like, even personally, because that's how you actually get to work better. Have one-to-one calls with them, speak about their performance, set clear expectations, career goals, help them with that. And here I have a note, don't wait to have the one-on-ones until there is an issue. So you want to be proactive about meeting them and knowing them before there is an issue, so you know, because issues will come eventually, so you want to be ready and know how to tackle them with the person, have a better rapport. And if you can, meet them in person at least once a year, because usually they will be remote, but if you do have the possibility for whatever reason, meeting them in person can pay dividends, because you know the way they will work and the way they will cooperate with you will be different when you have met them in person. I mean, you guys, you know, when you meet here, you know how it is, things spark. And you don't have to just come in, meet and leave. There's a way to build up to that meeting, right? So you can prepare on a particular topic for a few weeks, ramping up to getting efficient and, you know, getting more productive into that particular topic until you actually meet them and discuss, you know, a bunch of things that you want to discuss, coming back to some outcomes that are coming later through the sprint, right? So there are many good ways to create a good session in person with the people. So, as we say here, you know, accountability and culture are paramount. You want to have that raised, trust and verify, and of course, remember that you're managing the people, not the process. In summary, coming towards the end, look out for intelligence and attitude, not just a skill set. Make sure that they match your company. Define your process in a way that is nimble enough, but that you actually can follow it and you will follow it. Not having a process that is not followed It's like having a garden and not playing in the garden. So you really want to, have a process that you can follow and that you can see yourself following. And you manage the content through the process and the roadmap and user stories, but you also have to manage the people. And in that process, in that journey, there are things that you will retain, and there are things that you can easily delegate to a CTO, a fractional CTO, or a fractional CPO for very specific particular topics.
Hope that was useful. Before we get into Q&A, just very quickly about us, how we can help. If you need to hire pre-vetted developers, any place, any location really, we headhunt. That is a person that you can have within your own team. We provide technical leadership. So if anybody needs help with setting up those processes, setting up the right development standards, doesn't have tech leadership in-house, a fractional CTO can help. So we have a bunch of those. Next up would be product leadership. And so we have people like Miguel, who's our fractional CPO, to come in and drive your process, understand what culture makes sense, what process makes sense, how you can estimate better, all of that one-on-one in a few workshops. Every fractional CTO, CPO is very on demand, just on an hourly basis. There's no huge packages, nothing that you need. And you get a lot of help in just a few hours. Last but not least, we also have a network of reliable software houses. So if you're more a turnkey development guy, I don't want to mess with any of that, just want to get it done. There's upsides, downsides, of course, to either approach, but we have a network of reliable software houses as well. Usually what we do, unless somebody just comes in and says, yeah, I know what I need, I just need this, get me that. I don't know, full stack JavaScript dev in Latin America, I don't know. Then we go through a bit of a bigger process that people appreciate, which is first a workshop to understand what is it that you do, who are you, where do you want to go, what scale are you at, what are the people, what are the symptoms, what are the problems, the pain points. That's a workshop that takes an hour, plus then we get back with an audit and an action plan, which is completely free for you guys at the SaaS Academy. So just hit us up for that, schedule with us, and we'll do that. And then if you want these slides, just send me an email. I'll send those to you. We're having a recording, so we'll put that live as well. And we also, I think I mentioned at the beginning, we do a lot of stuff on YouTube. So smaller videos, shorter videos on specific topics. You can also always ask us questions, and we might just as well make a video on that. Q&A, anything that's not been answered. Anybody have any questions? Yeah.
Can I get just a, like, kind of four bullet points of the management positions within the departments? Like, the CTO isn't managing the developers, I'm trying to figure out.
Yes.
Kind of those roles, like product lead, tech lead, project manager.
Yes. So this is more about roles, right? It can be one person, can all be one person in theory, right? And most founders operate this way, right? But you need to have somebody who's owning a certain role, which is who manages the people. Who manages the process? Who manages progress? Who manages how we build things and what type of developer we need and if it's been done well, right? And then that naturally falls into certain categories, like, okay, this CTO, tech lead, whatever, lead developer naturally tends to like to work more on, did we do this correctly? What's the best way to develop this? But they tend to not really like doing the people management stuff. Well, of course, there's those that do, but mostly no. And so clearly establishing who does that, right, within your company, who owns that, that is the key, right?
What are the typical titles, though? Because right now, as we have developers, we have tons of team, but we feel like we're missing some holes because, like, our lead developer feels like the tech lead, but is kind of doing some project management.
So the titles may vary based on the size of the company, right? So if you have a bigger company, you might have CTO, CPO, and all those. If the company is not that big, you certainly want to have a product manager. A product manager is a person that would do the roadmap planning with the rest of the company, with the founders, the owners. You definitely want to have a technical lead. Technical lead could be a senior developer, but that person, what they're doing is they're understanding what needs to be done, kind of breaking it down into a solution, and then, you know, kind of assigning tasks to the other developers and making sure that the right person does the right thing, right? They're kind of doing some kind of capacity planning in that sense. The interesting part is the person wearing the hat, when they're doing that, they're not developing, right? So we cannot count them as a full-time person developing, which is like I have a team of five and they're not performing as five, yeah, because one of them is actually doing the rest of things, right? So you have your product manager, you have your technical lead. When the company is very big, then you have a CPO and a CTO. And the CPO and CTO would work more on the strategy level, on the roadmap, dealing with partners, dealing with negotiating the hosting with AWS and whatnot. But very often, if the company is not that big, those things can be done by the owner of the company, and then the product person and the technical person will take care of it.
And how about the last question I have is the where we're failing is the project management. Who in there actually manages the deadlines and are they meeting deadlines and things like that? That's where I'm
at. So that's the project manager. And the project manager can replace a product person. If your growing pain is missed deadlines and timelines, then more than a product person that understands what needs to be done and, you know, and goes out and makes a plan out of it, what you want is a product manager that has a BA, business analysis skills, and they can write these stories, but they can also plan with the development team how long it takes to build something. And because they're project minded in that sense, they will tend to look at things into a timeline. It will grind their gears when things are not working the way they should and when they're getting slow. So usually a project manager is a better option for that.
That's really the challenge within small companies, right? Is that people are wearing those multiple hats because there's like 20 roles in software development, right? And it's like, we're trying to hire our first five and how does that fit in there, right? And so that's the crucial thing, that the first person to lead and own the development team, oftentimes, because you at the high level as the owner of a company, you can keep doing strategy and road mapping, is a combo role of a project manager slash business analyst. Business analyst is the person doing the documentation, project managers or scrum master, doing those kind of things. Scott.
More recent comment, we've been working with Chuck Shoring in Dell for 6 months. So I just want to do a shout out on that. The biggest distinction I think that we found out, Dell and the team kind of got me, was like the difference between a product manager and a project manager. So as the owner, I was the CTO and the creator of the products. I knew what features people needed, but just the managing of the process and making sure that there was deadlines and there was actually a roadmap, that all it was just in my head, and all of that was the hard part. So Miguel's like, you need a project manager. I was like, what? You know, I didn't know that was a thing. And so they actually found that person, embedded them, and brought them in. It's been amazing. We actually have a roadmap for the first time. Imagine that. And I still have a lot of input into the product. I'm still setting direction and tech leads and things like that. We push out kind of our process that way. But it's a lot more hands-off now. I think I actually had to focus on some other things. And Miguel meets with the team once a week. I have my baby to kind of push out from there, and he's basically asking questions and giving them kind of the direction and take it from there. So it's a great process. It's just kind of understanding kind of where these things fit. And even though you don't be a full-fledged product manager, you can still have that role, that like a project manager that actually manages the process for you. That was a huge distinction.
Thank you.
I'll buy you a drink later.
And it really worked in that way. Normally when I work with a new company, usually it starts with the owner and the founder, right? But soon after, like Scott did, they kind of remove themselves and they let the team kick in, and we start working with the development team and we start kind of actually making changes. But everything has been almost kind of pre-agreed with the owner before, because we had a few sessions, so there's nothing new to them. They just know where things are going and they can just detach themselves and get other things. In pure Scrum words, that would be a product owner versus a product manager, right?
Yeah.
It's just that a product owner in pure Scrum is less concerned with timelines and more concerned with, you know, the value to the user and other things. And those value to the user in a very small company, you know that already. Right? So it's more about managing the timelines and managing the way the development team works. So if I'm a project manager, I know that I'm working on this particular iteration in this particular sprint, but I have to be prepared in my next sprint. I have to be already organizing my next sprint with the development team as well, right? I need to know how much capacity of the sprint do I dedicate to roadmap work versus estimating and planning the next sprint versus, you know, or fixing bugs or whatever. So that's more of a project manager mentality, more than a product owner mentality. But definitely, yes, it's the kind of a similar role.
I may have just had a question now, it's great tips on like how to manage employees. Do you have any tips on like
actually the hiring process. You actually have candidates and how to.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Obviously, if you don't want to do it, you can always come to us. But we personally feel, that's been our experience, that if you want to hire good senior developers, job boards are usually hit or miss. It's a bit better now than it used to be a couple of years ago, but the good people aren't necessarily looking actively. They need to be headhunted. So, in all full disclosure, we still use good old LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Works pretty well. It's a lot of work. And then, of course, our internal process, that's exactly how you can do it, is we obviously screen CVs, make sure things check out. Then we interview people, and we just make sure that their story checks out. We make sure their background checks out. We ask a few questions around what they've previously been doing. We try to really go into soft skills too. And we prepare all of that with a workbook up front to understand what is that leadership position, how do they work with the team. And so we try to verify that in the interview as well. And so that is an important part. Miguel was speaking about culture and values and all that, that to really go there as well, not just the technical skills, but the soft skills too, almost more crucial. But then we do an in-depth technical interview by a CTO. If you want to cheat and not pay us the recruiting fee, you can just pay us for a fractional CTO to do the vetting. I didn't say that. So that's how we internally work, right? So there's a CTO that does the vetting, in-depth technical interview for about an hour, and those are then the candidates that fall out of that process.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the difference between Kanban, of course, and Scrum? I've seen those two, and you know, what are the most, what do you see in the market for, you know, 1 to 5 developers, teams?
Yeah, sure. So
in terms of measurement as well.
Very good question. So Kanban is more a list of tasks. You just keep taking the last one on the top. You just keep prioritizing that backlog. And there is no timeline, no sprint cycle as such. You just keep working on whatever is at the top. You take one, work on it, take another one, work on it, and take another one, work on it. So in Scrum, you do cycles. You have sprint cycles, so the team has a backlog, and the team picks what should be in the sprint based on their capacity, on the amount of work that they can do. And then they focus on that, and they keep working on that for like a sprint, 1 week, 2 weeks, and the outcome should be what they committed. In terms of measurement, that's a very interesting question. Sprint and Scrum are kind of easier to measure, right? Because I know the team capacity, I know how many people I have. I'm measuring in story points. Story points could be complexity-based or could be time-based. You know, I could say 1 story point is 2 hours of work. Or I could say 5 story points is fixing something like this other thing that we fixed last week. So I can totally measure how much they committed to versus how much they actually delivered. And your standard tools, DevOps, Jira, will give you those charts. You have burn-down charts and all that. In terms of Kanban, it's more complicated because you don't normally measure that much. You're just more into just doing things and, you know, take one, work on it. And so Kanban works very well for DevOps teams, for example. You know, anything that's working on infrastructure, for example, will just take a bunch of tasks. They keep prioritizing the backlog and they keep working on them. Scrum mode is more for teams that are working on features and feature development and in creating something new or adapting something. And I have never seen a company that follows Scrum or Kanban by the book. So you always get to know, you make changes and adapt. And you could take a Kanban week, you know, for a couple of weeks or three, and then get back to Scrum if you wanted to. Absolutely. Yeah, this is very crucial, actually. I keep saying that this is the number one thing that's going to bite you when you want to sell, because you have to go back and backfill lots of documents with people who might not be working for you anymore, because you need to have that IP ownership. NDA, sure, important question always if they're remote contractors, how enforceable that is, but you have to have it. The IP is the crucial thing that needs transfer. I'm not a lawyer, we're not lawyers, but our own contracts are done by lawyers, so that they do that. But if you want to hire your own, do make sure, get a lawyer, get one quick template. Don't
don't skimp on that. I think I'm all for templates and everything, but I think that one needs to be safe, because we have seen people call us in the middle of the night. It's like, we're selling. Do you know this software house we used 4 years ago? They figured we don't own the IP. And it's like, okay. and it worked out, but you know, you don't want to be in that position. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you.
It's called an IP assignment.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.